Hello and welcome to another episode of Nonprofit Vision. This is Greg Nielsen. I'm the president and CEO of Nielsen Training and Consulting, where we work with nonprofit leaders and organizations in areas of board governance, strategy, and organizational development. I want to welcome everybody to the newest episode of the podcast, and I'm thrilled to be joined by Deepa Iyer with us today. Deepa is a civil rights lawyer. She's an activist, she is a writer, and is currently the senior fellow at an organization named Race Forward. So we're going to talk a little bit more about Deepa's background, but Deepa, I'd like to welcome you to the podcast and thank you for making time to join us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Greg.
If you could maybe begin by telling us a little bit about your organization, Race Forward.
Yeah, sure. So I work in an organization that is a nonprofit, a national nonprofit organization called Race Forward. And the organization's focus is on ensuring racial equity and racial justice in a variety of different ways. So we do trainings, we work with different organizations and sectors, whether it's government, philanthropy, or nonprofits around the country. And my particular project at the organization is through a fellowship. And the project focuses on multiracial solidarity in the United States, especially as our demographics change and we become a nation where there are increasingly greater groups of ethnic, religious, racial diversity. How do we practice solidarity with each other, within our organizations, within our movements? And so you can get more information about that at www.solidarityis.org to learn a little bit more about the project and its goals.
Absolutely. And you are also a published author. Maybe you can talk for a minute about your book, We Too Sing America. I know it has gotten wide praise and acclaim nationally, but maybe what inspired you to write the book and give us a brief overview.
Sure. So my work has primarily been in communities who are South Asian, Arab, Muslim, and Sikh American immigrants and others here in the U.S. And one of the ways in which I work with these communities is to understand how certain policies in the United States around national security and immigration, as well as interpersonal violence around hate crimes or employment discrimination, has really affected these communities. Because in today's world, people unfortunately often think of Muslims, South Asians, Arabs, and Sikhs as suspects or as potential terrorists. And we've seen that more so in the post 9/11 era. So my book is actually a way to think about what has actually been happening to these communities on the ground, to reflect their lived experiences, and it documents experiences of young people from these communities who have endured hate violence, who have endured racial profiling or deportation orders against them, and how they're really shaping their lives and contributing to the communities around them. And it was inspired by the fact that I also often teach in colleges, and one of the classes I was teaching, I realized that my students didn't have a really comprehensive understanding of what had transpired in the United States in the decade and a half after the horrific 9/11 attacks. And so this book is also a way to really write that history from the standpoint of communities that we don't often hear about.
And I think it's wonderful to speak directly to their stories by including the stories of individuals that are affected. And as you mentioned, both through students in schools, but also for adults in communities to be able to read more about and learn more about the lived experience of others brings us closer to those issues and starts a dialogue that's really important in many ways.
Absolutely, yeah. And one of the things I did with the book, Greg, was that I was in a range of community conversations around the country in different cities and really saw how these experiences, as you said, the lived experiences of people can create empathy and create a sense of identification with people that, you know, folks may have thought of as the other or as different. All of a sudden, the storytelling becomes a way to connect, and that can really lead to a lot of transformative change.
So Deepa, in addition to your role with Race Forward, you're a civil rights lawyer, obviously, but you've also been a nonprofit executive. Maybe talk to us a little bit about your background as a nonprofit executive and how that shaped your thoughts, your writing, your work today.
That is such a good question. I am definitely someone who has spent, I would say, almost all of my career in the nonprofit sector. So about 20 years or so in various nonprofits at the national level and at the local level. And, you know, one of the reasons that I think that the nonprofit sector has always drawn me to it is that there is a real sense that we can be creative and innovative and we can be connected to a cause or a community that we care about. And so I've always found that the nonprofit environment feels like home to me, where I can be myself, where I can actually move ideas and programs that I really feel passionate about in concert with others who feel the same. So my trajectory has included playing different roles at nonprofits over the past 20 years, including a 10-year effort as the executive director of a nonprofit that I helped to create at the national level that works with South Asian American communities. It's called South Asian Americans Leading Together, or SALT, S-A-A-L-T. And it was really formed in the wake of the post 9/11 moment, because at the time we did not have a national organization that represented or spoke for South Asian American communities. And so I spent 10 years, you know, really kind of understanding how you put together the nuts and bolts of a nonprofit organization, which, you know, was quite challenging in many ways. And I really learned about, you know, what my learning edges are, and also that as an ED, you know, there's no finishing school to be an executive director. You kind of wing it. And I made a lot of mistakes winging it. And I also learned, you know, what are some of the opportunities and the possibilities when you take on a position like that as well. So it's certainly shaped the way that I think, the way that I lead, the way that I work and collaborate with others, and the way that I think about how all of us have different roles to play as activists in movements or in nonprofit sectors.
I think that that's so insightful. I really appreciate those thoughts. Like you, you and I share a very similar background. I'm an attorney by background as well, served as a nonprofit executive director for over a decade, just like you. And I think that that's so powerful, that lived experience that you and I and so many of our listeners have had in leading organizations really does frame the way we see community issues, the way we embrace dialogue and embrace opportunities to start critical conversations in community.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't know if you feel this way, Greg, but I also feel that the nonprofit sector at some level is in a place of, you know, some level of turmoil and some level of change. You know, I think a lot about the fact that in the nonprofit sector generally, there is a lot of turnover where people come and go, and there's often a revolving door at organizations. And I think about this culture of scarcity that exists at a lot of nonprofits, not for a bad reason. You know, it's because we are under-resourced, we are underfunded, and we are trying to make do on very little, trying to create transformative change on very little dollars. And I think about how, especially with women of color, there was a recent report that I read that showed that women of color directors, executive directors, tend to leave their nonprofits within a 5-year period. And the reasons for that, you know, include burnout, include this sense of constantly, you know, pushing yourself, but not seeing results, not getting help from, you know, you mentioned board governance, from the board of directors and the way that EDs need it. You know, there's a lot of micromanaging or not enough trust. So I do think that the nonprofit sector right now is going through, you know, sort of, I think it's having a watershed moment. And I think it's really important as we think about the future. How do we strengthen our sector? How do we strengthen the leadership pipeline? How do we think about other avenues beyond the C3 structure to create change? These are all questions that I grapple with and think about quite a bit as I have sort of had some distance from being an executive director.
I think you're absolutely right. I would second all of those thoughts. I tell nonprofit executives now, and I'm sure others have said this at times in the past as well, but I think right now is the most challenging time to be a nonprofit professional ever. I think there are so many different things, complex community challenges, community changes, and you mentioned an environment of scarcity of investment in the pipeline, scarcity of traditional funding sources as government pulls back and as traditional funders such as the United Ways and others really grapple with their new reality. I think this is really the toughest time that I can recall to be a nonprofit professional.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you're saying that too, right? I think that anyone I talk to who's either in a nonprofit or advises nonprofits is concerned about these issues. And I think that they're structural issues. And I think they're part of the reason is that, you know, we don't have, as you said, the investments in the sector, even though the sector is becoming so much more important right now. I think about how in our country right now, we're leaning on civil rights organizations, for service organizations to support communities that are either under threat or under attack or feeling like their rights are being taken away. We really need our sector to play the role in civil society. And at the same time, we are, you know, in kind of a rapid response mode all the time. We're living, I would say, in a culture of both urgency and scarcity at once and grappling with that. And we just don't, you know, when I was in ED, I didn't have enough time to think about, okay, how do I make sure that the staff that we have are getting the training that they need, the professional development that they need, because I was also dealing with a lot of the issues that our communities were, you know, undergoing at the same time. So the lack of time, the lack of being able to balance all of these various priorities and the lack of support, whether it's from the philanthropic community or even from donors, really, I think, creates an untenable situation where a lot of nonprofit executives feel like no matter how hard we try, we just can't get the results that we want.
Absolutely. And that's a great segue to where we wanted to head next with the conversation, which is an article that that I recently read that you wrote that prompted me to reach out to you because I found it fascinating and phenomenal. And so many of my nonprofit clients have really appreciated it as well. And it talks about for those of us who are in this social change ecosystem, how to move away from that seesaw that a lot of people seem to be on between outrage and numbness, and how to really recognize your own role in the social change ecosystem. So if you could maybe give us a little bit of background on your article, and before we wrap up the podcast, we're going to make sure that folks know how to get their hands on the article. Because I know our listeners are going to want to read it just as much as I did.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm glad that it is being useful. So, you know, just to segue from what we were talking about with the nonprofit sector, I wrote this article and helped to create this image for folks because I thought that it would help a lot of people who are struggling to figure out what their role is and who might also be struggling because of the current environment of scarcity and urgency that they're in. And so it's a very simple image that identifies the various roles that folks can play in our ecosystems and our social change ecosystem. So it could be any ecosystem you work in, whether it's around, you know, whether it's with teachers or whether it's folks who are working on environmental justice or folks who are doing social service provision. And what the image actually asks of people is to identify what roles are they called to, what roles do they naturally fit into, what roles do they find themselves playing. So the roles range from frontline responders and disruptors, which are the two that I usually end up in, to other roles like visionaries, healers, storytellers, bridge builders. And there are a series of questions that folks might want to, you know, use as they work with this particular image. So asking yourself, where am I called to usually play a role? How do others see me? Where do I see myself is one kind of set of questions. And then another set of questions is, where do I aspire to be and how do I get there? What are the skills that I need to develop? So for organizations, it might be useful for your entire staff or your board to place themselves in this ecosystem and to say, what are we missing? Or how can someone who's a bridge builder be trained to be a visionary? So those are questions that could be asked so that you could work with this image and work with this idea and utilize it so that we recognize that we're not alone, that we are part of a broader ecosystem, and that there are ways in which we can move around in these roles that we don't have to feel stuck, and that we can actually reach out to others as well to help us figure out how we can train ourselves into playing different roles.
And as Deepa mentioned, we're going to go through a few of these roles and have Deepa explain what each of them means. But just to second what she just mentioned, the power of using this framework with a team, I recently facilitated a board retreat where we used this article, Deepa's article, as the backdrop, as the pre-read for the board retreat, and then had individual board members identify the roles that most resonated with them. And I have to tell you, it was one of the most powerful retreats that I facilitated, and the group really came together understanding themselves and understanding their role on the team in a fundamentally different way.
That makes me really, really happy to hear. And I have to tell you that I have been surprised at the reactions to this article and the worksheet because I didn't expect it. And it's definitely something that I think has resonated with a range of different people who are using it. And so I think part of it is because I think it's pretty simple in nature. And sometimes we tend to be very complex in our ideas. And I think this kind of gets us to a more basic understanding of why we got into this work in the first place. So just to go through a few of them. So frontline responders are usually people who are able to, you know, these are the people who are ready to go. The minute that there's an emergency in your community or in your organization, they're able to move instinctively into rapid response mode. They know who to call. They have a network of people that they can organize. They know what the messaging should be. And these are people who usually get burned out very, you know, because they're in this constant rapid response mode all the time. And it takes up most of their time. Another role that is in here is that of a bridge builder. These are people who within your organization can work across divisions. So the person, you know, who's like the nonprofit mom, so to speak, who might be able to, you know, listen to the challenges that staff might be having and try to build across those challenges. Or it could be the person who is in your nonprofit who can reach out to another community and say, let's get together to discuss XYZ or work on an issue together. Let's not let silos divide us. Others are people who are caregivers. And this was actually an idea that was that someone gave to me when I first put this out, that there should be a role for a caregiver. And these are the people who might be bringing water to a protest so that protesters have water and food. It could be someone who is ready to say, you know, you all, a board member who says, you know, your staff has been working really hard this year and I'm going to open my home to you and, you know, nourish you in some way so that you can relax. And then lastly, visionaries. These are the people who, and oftentimes these are our executive directors. These are the people who can tell us, show us what our North Star is for our organization, remind us what it is that our purpose is, and they are the ones who can reconnect us to that every time we feel burned out, burdened, challenged in some way. So those are just some of the different roles that are part of this image that folks can work with.
One of the roles that jumped out to me, and perhaps it's my bias, perhaps I self-identify as one, the role of the disruptor. Could you maybe talk a little bit about the role of the disruptor and how that's important, right, Deepa?
Yes, it is. And I think the other day I was working with a group of people with this particular image. And I think that one of the folks said something like, you know, the gentle agitator, right? And I think that might be another way of looking at it. And recommend and say gentle agitator, because sometimes disruptor might seem a little too outside of the box. But yeah, these are the people who take the risk to speak up, the risk to show up, the risk to say, you know what, we have been doing this program in the same way for 25 years and we need to make a change because it's no longer relevant to our community. So these are the people who are going to often ask the questions that make us feel a little uncomfortable, that lead us to our learning edge. And so they can be protesters, they can be the people who speak up at our staff meetings and ask that question that makes us feel a little bit like, I don't want to go there. So those are the types of people who are disruptors or gentle agitators.
Deepa, if you could maybe talk for a minute. When I talk to groups, the kind of warning that I give them is that sometimes we can make the mistake of putting every role on each of our shoulders, feeling like as nonprofit professionals, we have to be all of these things all of the time. We have to be builders. Yeah. We have to be visionaries, caregivers, disruptors. And it's really hard to be everything to everyone at all times. Talk maybe a little bit about how we understand which role we're playing at that moment and maybe give ourselves permission not to carry the weight of the world of all roles on our shoulders.
Yeah, I think that's so perceptive. And you're absolutely right. You know, one of the reasons that I wrote this is because I felt oftentimes that, you know, I was playing some of these roles constantly and it was too much. And so I looked out at the ecosystem around me and recognized there are lots of people playing lots of different roles, right? One person or a group of people should not be bearing all of these roles. But there is something about our work, about the nonprofit sector and the social change ecosystem, and I think it comes from maybe that culture of scarcity that makes us feel we have to take everything on. And I think particularly with managers, supervisors, directors, there is that feeling that I need to be the external and internal person for all of these different, you know, to play all of these different roles. So as I say in the article, you know, not all of us can or should play each of these roles because we might not have the skills, right? And so we might be just kind of faking it, which is not good for the organization. And it's going to really weigh on us psychically, mentally, it'll take an impact or a toll on our bodies, our spirits, and the like. So I think part of it is really figuring out what is the sustainable and healthy social change ecosystem where different actors are playing these roles at different times, and understanding that you can actually move around and you should figure out how you can move around and play different roles so that you're not stuck in one all the time as well.
And that's a great point. I love the way you bring that out in the article that, you know, sometimes the challenge with any type of framework that provides classifications is we feel like we have to identify ourselves as one or more of these roles, and that's our permanent role. And what you mentioned in the article is that sometimes the circumstances, the type of team that we're talking about, the skills and talents of other members of the team, allow us to move and flow within the different roles. So I don't always have to be the caregiver. At times I can be the disruptor. At times I can be the builder.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I think that it's also, it helps us to think about the fact that we are all working, if we're working for social change, it does take a toll on us because this is personal work and it means something to us. And so someone who's a frontline responder, you know, probably needs other people to say, hey, you've been carrying this for quite some time. You are always ready to respond. And I want to see if I can help you with that or shoulder some of that, or is there another role that you might want to play? So it also helps, I think, those who are supervisors or managers to look at the folks that they're training and leading to say, how do I actually identify different roles for them, or how do I step in to support them as well?
And I think for you and I, folks like us that work with nonprofit organizations and are constantly pushing leaders, staffs, boards to stretch themselves and to move into really difficult topics and complex conversations. How do you recommend organizations maybe use this framework to push themselves, to push their staffs into some of these difficult, challenging conversations?
Yeah, well, I think that the example you gave of how you used it at a board retreat recently is extremely helpful. I've seen, so I would suggest a couple of things. I think that one, I would really encourage people to take this exercise by themselves, you know, on your own, so that you actually sit with it and you think about what your roles have been in the past, what they are right now, and where you might aspire to. So I think that's one thing that I would recommend, and to do it 3 times a year. So the beginning of the year, the middle, and the end, and also do some comparative evaluations of where you may have moved throughout the course of the year. So I think that's really important. And then the second is to use it as part of a team building exercise. So it's a great exercise, I think, if people want to understand how their organization, what the ecosystem is in their own organization. So as you said, you used it with a board recently. I think I've seen people or organizations use it at the staff level and identify where their different staff are playing these roles and where the gaps are. And then I think that it could thirdly be used to answer some questions around, okay, where are our gaps? Do we need to identify who the builder is at our organization, or do we need to bring in someone who can play that role because that's missing and we think it's important? How do we figure out how to support people who might want to switch roles? So it could lead you as a manager or a director to make some decisions around your staffing, your supervision, your professional development as well. So I think those are three different ways in which the exercise could be used.
And that's honestly, that's how it played out with at the board retreat that I mentioned facilitating, is mm-hmm. that when the board looked at how they self-identified, there were some very clear gaps. And for this group, they were missing the storyteller role. Mm. And that was beautifully apparent. And they recognized it before I, as the facilitator, could even say anything.
Is that's that the best part.
Yes, and that's always a great thing.
Yeah.
Visually, they could see we're missing anyone who identifies as the storyteller. And one step further, they were able to pinpoint how that shows up, how that challenge has limited some of their impact and effectiveness.
Today. That's great.
It became a tool for them to use in prioritizing board recruiting and in talking about how to advance their work moving forward.
That's great. That's great. I think that's the perfect, that's ideal if it can move from both the individual and organizational assessment to actually making some decisions to prioritize what's next. I think that's fantastic, and I love hearing that.
And I think the final piece of the article in the framework that I like is that it does promote accountability and support mm-hmm. within the nonprofit profession that, as you and I mentioned earlier, is desperately needed. And trying to build that network of friends, colleagues, and supporters mm-hmm. who can hold you accountable but also support the individual when that's needed as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, I always, you know, ask folks to think about who is your community of support. And that can be people who are your cheerleaders, but it should also be people who are going to ask you the tough questions. So really identifying who those folks are, maybe seeing and making sure that they're not the people that are holding you accountable should ideally not be the people who are playing the same roles as you are. So for someone who's a gentle agitator or disruptor, it might really be important to have as a mentor, someone who's a visionary, who can ask the questions of, well, why do you see yourself as a disruptor? And what is this serving? What's the purpose you serve, right? So having a community of support of people who play different roles can actually be really helpful for our individual transformation.
Deepa, I know now that we've talked about the article, I know everyone listening to the podcast is all jazzed up and is all excited to get their hands on it. Yeah. If you could maybe share, how can people get their hands on this article and this framework?
Sure. So you can find it. It's free. It's open source. You can find it on Medium, medium.com, M-E-D-I-U-M.com. And you can just look me up, my full name, Deepa Iyer, and you'll be able to see it. You can also find it if you follow me on Twitter. It's at D as in David, V as in Victoria, Iyer, I-Y-E-R. And my pinned tweet. The top tweet you will see is a link to this article. So, and please feel free to reach out to me because I love to, and I'm so glad, Greg, that you did. I really appreciate that you reached out and told me that it was useful and that you used it and that we could connect in this way, because I think that these connections are so important. And the more that we do with this, the more kind of care that we're taking for our own sector and our leadership. So I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Deepa, thank you for your time. And I would encourage all of our listeners to follow Deepa on Twitter, connect with her there. She is a great follow, is constantly tweeting about really important issues in the nonprofit sector and the nonprofit community. And I know you would enjoy learning more about that. Deepa, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed our conversation.
I did as well. And for all of our listeners, I encourage you to please reach out to me directly. My email is gregory@nielsenconsults.com. If you're enjoying the podcast, I would love to hear from you about additional topics, additional guests that you would love to hear from. And again, you can find the podcast on my website at www.nielsenconsults.com or on your favorite podcast platform, whether that be iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play. Or the countless other podcast platforms that are out there. Deepa, thank you again for your time today.
Thank you so much.
And have a wonderful afternoon.
Thank you. Same to you.